things Archie's here. Betty's here. Veronica too. Reggie's here. Hey Jughead, where are you? Come on, let's go with the Archie Show.
Welcome to Archie Digest, a Riverdale podcast. We are a podcast about a story, about a town, and this week we are doing it's a hidden track. You remember back when you used to listen to cassette tapes or CDs, and there'd be those tracks that only existed if you, like, let the music play all the way out in, like, 5 minutes of silence and blah, 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 and, like, holy crap, there's a whole other song on here that wasn't listed on the jacket notes? That's pretty much this. This is just me, Russ. I'm sharing with you folks an interview I did with Marisol Nichols immediately prior to the season finale airing a few months ago. So we don't talk about a lot of the new stuff. We don't get into, like, the casting news and the Comic-Con stuff and all that kind of stuff. But it's a really interesting conversation. She was a lot of fun to talk to. I managed to trim down a half-an-hour interview to, like, a 15-minute thing, so we have, like, a mini-episode of the podcast that I can just kind of toss out there, because I really appreciate the support that we've still been getting even while we've been too lazy to make a podcast, which isn't entirely fair. We've all been really stumped at our day jobs. But for instance, today I got a really nice note from Sarah Ritter, who essentially sponsored the podcast. We have that thing where you can go and donate $10 and I'll send you a framed picture of Pops. And she sent us a very nice note telling us that, you know, she's enjoying listening to the podcast, presumably while she's watching it on Netflix. I really, really appreciated that, and it made me feel even worse about the fact that we hadn't gotten the new episode out in a while. So basically, Sarah, if you're listening, this interview with Marisol Nichols is because I got the note from you and really felt like, you know, the people who listen to this show are awesome, and they deserve something cool. So without any further ado, here's a chat with Marisol Nichols.
After we'd seen the pilot and spoken with the cast, we basically said, this show's great, these kids are great, like, let's do a podcast, and you know, the fact that we don't all work for the same people and nobody's getting paid, kind of notwithstanding.
Well, that's awesome, and I really appreciate it. It's really cool to find people that got behind the show from the beginning, you know?
I mean, I guess the biggest thing is that you fit into a really kind of, I won't say easy, because obviously it's your job, but from the outside, it looks like you fit into a really easy rhythm with Cammy.
Oh,
how much work went into crafting that relationship? Because it's really complex and really interesting, but you guys feel like you snapped right into it.
Thanks. Well, I would say the core of the relationship between me and Cammy, you're right, was very, very easy. And that doesn't happen all the time, and that's, you know, basically just boils down to chemistry, and you get along or you don't get along. But we were really lucky that we both just sort of really were drawn to each other and had a natural affinity for each other. The hard stuff comes when they have these twists and turns in our relationship, particularly with my character when she's seemingly betraying her daughter. And I was like, oh, my God, it's hard. I'm like, how do I justify doing all that when I've built this relationship on trust and genuine love from Hermione to her daughter? And so basically we've boiled it down to, like, you know, parents don't always make the best decisions, or sometimes they do make the best decisions, but kids don't always have all the information. And so it doesn't seem like, you know, the parent has best interest. I have your best interest in mind. But sometimes it is. And when it comes to Hiram, it's such a dangerous game there that I just trust that Hermione is doing what she's doing to protect her family at all costs, even when it may not seem like the right thing to do.
Has it gotten easier for you, kind of that disconnect you're talking about, where you're like, wow, this isn't how I approached the character before? Has that gotten a little bit easier as you learned more and more about Hiram throughout the season? Because I feel like by the end of the season, whatever Hermione's doing, you kind of understand it's almost out of desperation.
Oh, good. Thank you. I've been trying to make sure that was there. It was hard. Honestly, it was not easy because I just didn't have all that information about Hiram, and I kind of got that. I kind of had to fill in the blanks for myself of, like, okay, Hiram is dangerous. He must be dangerous. He landed in prison. He's obviously still controlling things from there. This is a man who can do a lot of damage. At the same time, Hermione married him. So I had to sort of fill in these blanks of, like, well, how were they together? And why did she marry him? What were they like when they first met? How has she had to, you know, what has she had to do to survive along the way when she first discovered Hiram was not on the up and up? And she stayed. Mm-hmm. It's not like she left. It's not like she went, oh, my God, you're doing something illegal, I'm gone. She didn't. And that's telling, you know? It's been a work in progress, and I'm constantly kind of adjusting my idea of Hermione based on the more information that I get along the way, which is the fun thing about doing TV, is the characters are evolving. It's not just one storyline. You're doing lots and lots of storylines and learning more and more about the characters as you go along. It's really, really fun.
I think, obviously, you guys learned a lot more of the specifics as the season went along and kind of as the audience did, but going in, when you, you know, when you read for this part, when you met with Roberto, did he tell you guys, oh, yeah, just so you know, the parents aren't just parents. They've got all their own craziness going on, too.
Oh, absolutely. I wouldn't have taken the role if it was just parents, to be completely honest. At that point, it's just a paycheck. And you're not working, you know, for any kind of artistic satisfaction at all. And for me, you know, even though I may be foolish, sometimes I care more about the artistic satisfaction than I do about the paycheck, and that ends up getting me sometimes in trouble financially. I'm like, oh, man. At the same time, I'm as happy as can be. You know what I mean?
Mm.
So with Riverdale, Roberto, you know, laid it all out and told me what was coming and what the character was going to go through and all of these twists and turns that I was like, I can definitely not only sink my teeth into this, but I want to be a part of something this special. I mean, I kind of felt, I think all of us did maybe, although most of the kids don't have anything to compare it to. But we all sort of felt in the beginning like, wow, this is really something special.
It's funny, when we went to the first set visit way back in November, one of my co-hosts on the podcast asked Lily about similarities between Betty and Joey Potter on Dawson's Creek. And, you know, he's 40 and a TV writer, and so he assumes that asking, you know, that just saying the name Joey Potter would get some kind of reaction. And and poor Lily was just like, I'm sorry, I have no idea who that is. And,
isn't that crazy? It's crazy.
Yeah.
I know. Not that people don't know who Joey Potter is, but just that people don't know things that we grew up with or loved or whatever. I'm like, how can you not know that? I'm like, oh, you were like three. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's the conversation we're constantly having. For instance, I was talking to one of the folks from iZombie the other day, and he's about my age, so he mostly got this, but I had to explain it for context. Being a classic TV nerd, I described his character as being like Harry the Hat from Cheers.
Okay.
The con man who was like a recurring character, and he was never a good guy, but, you know, occasionally they'd use him, but... And it was like, even that, he needed a little bit of prompting of like, wait, I think I know what you mean, but is that the guy from Night Court? Yeah.
That's awesome.
What can you tease about tomorrow's episode? Because, I mean, Hermione is very much a presence in tomorrow's episode, and I feel like you have at least three different kind of levels that you are operating at.
Yes. Well, I can tell you that I went to the writers like, oh, God, I don't know how many times to go, okay, hold on, can we just talk about this again? Because it was such a turn. It was such a turn. And I had, like, I mentioned at the beginning, like, I had really built up my idea of what Hermione was operating off of, and then there was this, you know, 360-degree turn. And I don't know what, I know that some of it, honestly, was cut out, so I don't know what made it in the final episode. I'll find out tomorrow. But the, you know, I can only talk about what I did and what I shot, and that was, it was just a real change, and I embraced it. I loved it, but it was delicate, because I'm like, she's seemingly turning on her daughter, you know? She's seemingly going down this other road and betraying Fred again in my mind, and like, it's hard. It was really hard, but I'm glad that it was hard, because I wanted to bring that to Hermione as well, and that she's just got to do what she's got to do, and that she has more information than anybody else. And I still trust that she's operating off of, like, the greatest good for everyone. even though it does not come across like that on the surface. And so I hope that, I was hoping that that desperation would sort of come through, because that's what I feel was real for her. You know, that there was an actual, she's doing what she has to because she doesn't have a choice. And no one else, they may or may not understand it, but she's got to do it anyway, regardless. So that was my understanding of it. Yeah.
Real early on, I want to say episode 3 or 4, I can't remember what, but I had turned to somebody and I said, do you think this is Arrested Development? Do you think that really Hermione's the one pulling all the strings and Hiram is a patsy?
Yep.
And then, like, 2 episodes later was the one where Veronica makes you come clean about forging the documents. And, yep, like, your performance in that episode just kind of immediately put the is Hermione secretly the boss thing to lie, because it was like, yeah, she just seems so terrified by the notion of having to come forward with this, that later on, if you turned out to be the bad guy, it wouldn't make any sense.
Oh, good. Well, I was really, I actually had that same question at the end, too, when on the season finale, I was like, wait a minute, has she been doing this all along? Is this completely, like, okay? How do I, And like I said, having a slightly rough time of making all of this make sense. But still trusted that, like, look, she's doing this because she has to. It's forging Veronica's signature to get Hiram out. You know, my thought at the time was, if she doesn't do this, he's going to kill her. And that may or may not be true. And I will know more, like I said, as the season, as second season comes and we meet Hiram, that will be telling, you know. But I'm discovering it as we go along. And just my driving force has been, Hiram's dangerous. She's going to stand by him. And we don't know if she's standing by him because she's in agreement with him, or if she's standing by him because she is so desperately scared of what he may do to Veronica and her. I don't know. But that has been my whole operating basis for her.
One thing that I wanted to ask you, and I'll hold this until after the finale, obviously, but it's just the very first thing that popped into my head. Do you think it's possible that it was Hermione and not Fred who contracted the gunman? And not Hiram.
I do. I really do. I just don't know her motivation. My understanding, and I'm going to stick by it all the way through. Like, I don't know if you've watched House of Cards season 4. Do you watch House of Cards at all? Okay.
Yeah.
So Claire does some really horrific stuff. You know, it tells her mom she's going to sell the house out from under her for $1 million and it doesn't matter, and covers up murders and all of these things. And she's driven by, I don't care, I'm going to get there. And she does these horrific things to fight as, Hiram's dangerous, protect Veronica, stay on top. And I feel that those are good intentions. They don't always manifest themselves in the best way, and I'll see in season 2. Who knows? Like, the other thought is, like, look, she must love Hiram. Either way, even if she's scared, there was at some point something that made her marry this man. And I have my own stories of, you know, okay, so maybe he lied to her and she didn't know all the darkness that was within him. And then when she found out, it was too late. And I sort of stick by that. And that when she met Fred again, saw him again, and Hiram's, you know, technically gone, it kind of opened up this whole world for her of, like, oh, what if I would have done the right thing? What if I would have just taken this route? I could have had such a simpler life. And unfortunately, her old decisions, and they were her decisions, come back and haunt her. And so, yeah, if she ended up hiring that crew and all that stuff, I wouldn't put it past her, but I would argue that her intentions were she had to, didn't have a choice.
Yeah, it was interesting, because I turned off the television and my first thought was, you know, it really looks like Fred could survive this. I almost wonder if Hermione, this is a warning shot before Hiram gets back and it gets really dangerous.
Yes, exactly. And that's what I will always, I'll always use that, even if it's not on the paper, even if we don't see all of it, we don't see her struggle to having to do something like that, I still feel that that's what happens off camera.
Because it's such an interesting balancing act, what you've been doing with this character, because I feel like to everyone outside of the house, she has to appear like she's on top of everything. you've been a little bit more raw with Cammy, but at the, like when you have her in the finale, when you're telling her essentially, go make Archie tell his dad to listen to reason, that scene, like, I feel like on the page it could have come off very, very badly. For me, I kind of felt like this was your character just going, like, I have zero options left, and this is a Hail Mary.
Yeah. That's exactly what I had. And he has to do this, because he will be destroyed if he doesn't. And that was my, as cold as it comes across, it's sort of like she doesn't have a choice. It's sort of like, I don't know how else I could describe it, but if, as a mother, if something's happening to your kid or there's a danger for your kid and you're like, run, and the kid's like, I don't want to leave. He's like, run, go, get out of here. Like, you do whatever you have to do to keep that child safe. I feel like that is the same sort of area where Hermione is when she's telling Cammy to go to do that. It's like, it doesn't matter. You have to do this. We have to do this. He has to sign. He has to do this kind of thing.
Right.
At least that's what I had driving myself. And so I love that it came across like as well. Great. Thank you. Yay. Yeah, because it's been a struggle. It's been, like, as you mentioned, the things on paper don't have all the reasons why written in. And we haven't seen the journey that she's taken. It's all off camera. We just see the result of it. So as an actor being faced with that, you just have to make it go right, I guess, and justify it off screen so that it comes across on screen, if that makes sense.
Sometimes in the first season, you don't really have time to color in all of the backstory for the actors because you might need to change that in episode 5.
Absolutely. Yep.
But
I wonder about it because Roberto, when we were like, who killed Jason Blossom? Roberto had told us that the killer, because we're like, who's the killer? Who's the killer? And he said, you saw him in the pilot. We're like, really? Okay, who was in the pilot? And that's, there were so many people in the pilot that it's just, honestly, that Tatum didn't have.
That was actually, if you ever talk to Rob Thomas about Veronica Mars, he will tell you that he has this philosophy that a murder mystery, or a mystery in general, is more satisfying if the bad guy was there the whole time. And so,
nice. Okay,
for me, I had that thing where, like, you know, Joaquin came in, and everybody's like, oh, well, what about him? And that one actually made a resurgence on our podcast because there was a conversation where we were like, why would it have been recorded? And then it was like, well, if it was Joaquin's initiation of the serpents, maybe? I don't, you know. But, like, but then still you're saying, oh, no, the killer's a dude who got introduced midway through the season, and that feels like a little bit of a cheat.
Yeah, I agree. That's interesting about Rob's point of view. I get that. It's worth. I agree with him.
Since I know you're running, I'll ask one more thing. Outside of, you know, you got a lot of FaceTime with Fred and with Luke and with Cammy this season.
Yeah.
Are there any characters you're really hoping to flesh out your story with next year? Because I feel like every time you got on camera with somebody, all of the unspoken backstory started to boil over right away.
Good. That's what I wanted, and that's what I had. So I'm so glad. I would like, I've answered this question so many different ways, but honestly, this is probably the first time I've answered it truly and correctly, if that makes sense. Because I'll get, you know, on the red carpet. Who are you hoping to work with next year? To be honest, I really liked the scenes that I had with FP because, as you said, there was this giant backstory. And I loved being kind of caught between FP and Hiram. That's a fun place for an actor to be. And that we didn't, you know, and LP was helping her, and why are you telling me this, and why, oh, it's for Fred. I would love to see more of that. And maybe if Hermione is going to try to branch out on her own, she may need FP's help when it comes to Hiram. So I'm interested in seeing that sort of thing. And then from a purely, like, just fun and delicious point of view, I liked Alice. I really liked Alice and Hermione's relationship. I wanted to see, and originally there was more of that in the pilot and in the first couple episodes where they were really just kind of at each other's throats and as Alice couldn't let go of high school BS and kind of things. Mm. But I really liked that, and I think it's real. And I think, look, people hold grudges for a very long time. And that's just more like my own, oh, wouldn't that be fun? And yeah. Plus, Machen's an amazing actress, so, you know, whenever we get together, it's just really fun.
It's funny. As a reporter, I saw the Comic-Con cut and then a second cut in Vancouver before I ever finally got the one they were going to put on television. I've seen three different cuts, and the middle one was a lot more adults. Like, there was the scene between Archie and Fred that I described as, like, the Gilmore Girls scene, where he tells him, like, you never need to lie to me, was way longer in that middle cut, and that cut had more of you and Alice.
I know, and that was sort of the bane of my existence all year, was I just expected anything that Hermione was in was going to be shortened and cut. And that's just the way it is when you're shooting only 13 episodes, but you filled those episodes with so much story. You know, we weren't the only things that got cut. I know there were scenes completely with Archie and Valerie that got completely cut, not even shortened, just cut. And I'm looking forward to next season when we have more episodes so that things don't get shortened and we have a little bit more breath that we can play with, you know?
Yeah, I remember talking to Cole, and when we were up there for the finale, everybody told us that 10 was their favorite episode. And Cole was the only one who dissented, and he said 7. But he said, I know why everybody likes 10 so much. We said, why is that? He said, because 10 is like the only episode we've shot so far where every important thing that happened in the script got to the screen. The screenplay was so tight that nothing important got cut, and everything made it. And so everybody loves it because nobody got their baby killed.
Oh, that's a good point. Was I there? I must not have been there when you came up.
We didn't do interviews with any of the adults when we came up for the finale.
Oh, okay. We
were there on the second to last day. Like, they had already wrapped most of the cast. Yeah. They had already wrapped Ashley. They brought her back just to talk to us. And then, like, they put us in a room with basically all of the kids except for Cole and Ashley and had us live tweet the episode with them.
Oh, okay.
And then at that point, it more or less just petered out into us chatting about stuff, talking about rumors, blah, 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 blah. Most of it wasn't usable, just in terms of us getting off on wild tangents and saying things that we shouldn't say. But thank you guys for listening to this hidden track on Archie Digest, a Riverdale podcast. As I said, check back with us very soon. If you want to hear anything else from us in the meantime, obviously, Craig is at K-Site TV. I'm at comicbook.com. Chris is all over the place. He's doing a lot of freelance work for, I think, The Hollywood Reporter right now. Meanwhile, you can follow Waterworld Photos on Instagram for Chris's passion project. You can follow Riverdale TV on Twitter for Craig's Riverdale posts. And for me, you can follow ECV_podcast. That's the Emerald City Video Podcast, where a bunch of my friends and I from when I used to work at a video store 10, 15 years ago all get together and talk about movies. It's about as silly as it sounds.
Everything's Archie. Archie's here. Betty's here. Veronica, too. Reggie's here. Jughead, where are you? Come on, let's go with the Archie Show.